Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And this is a very unique play that I'm going to be talking about. And I'm going to be talking about the star of the play, Nicholas Mangiardo Cooper. And I'm going to be talking also with the director, Jenny Sullivan. And if I find out that Jenny has directed so many of the wonderful plays that we've seen over the years here in Santa Barbara. And I want to introduce both of them, but I want to tell you the play itself is kind of an interesting concept. I mean, I read this and I thought, Jenny, I thought, my gosh, you know, my mom sort of had battled depression all her life. And she just passed this September, age of 96. And I was thinking of, you know, the premise of the play. And Nick, you know, Nick's character is offering mom all the, like you say, every brilliant thing in an effort to kind of make her see the glass half full and not half empty. And it really hit home for me. And I wanted to say, I'm excited to see the opening on June 3rd at the New Vic Theater in Santa Barbara. And of course, this is made possible by the Ensemble Theater Company of Santa Barbara, our only professional theater company and a member of the League of Resident Theaters, which is called LORT for all of you guys. This is part of this series called Truth and Illusion. And this particular play, Every Brilliant Thing, written by Duncan McMillan and Johnny Donahoe, is directed by Jenny Sullivan, who's here with us, and the star also is here. Nick, you go, Nick, I'll say Nick, and it's Mangiardo Cooper. And there's many different ways to see the play. I was really impressed looking at the website. There's going to be pay what you can. There's going to be a tea. There's going to be a, you know, cocktail. There's going to be, there's many different genres of the community, members of the community are invited to do their own thing at the theater. And I think that's a fantastic way to present. This is going to be in the round. There's a lot of audience participation. I want to know how that's going to work when we talk with Jenny. And so just quickly, before we start introductions here, the play is about basically what makes life worth living. That's the title, you know, Every Brilliant Thing. And this young man starts a list of every brilliant thing in the world, helping, like I was saying about my mom, helping a mom through depression. And the list grows. You know, they talk about, or Nick talks about, ice cream, the color yellow, the sound of laughter, etc. And the audience is, it's in the round, you know, and so the audience is participating. I mean, it's a super concept. I love it. Let me introduce our panel. Jenny Sullivan. I mean, the thing that stands out to me, looking at her bio online, she was one of the founding members of Santa Barbara's Mind Caravan. Okay, what was that? Michael Gonzalez's group, and that became Summer Solstice, which we still, you know, are crazy enough to continue every year. And she's a founding member of that. She has a thespian father who she directed, but some of the, I mean, this is an amazing woman. Some of the performances in some of the theaters that she's worked in, Wallace Annenberg, the Geffen, Royal Manitoba, the Acorn, Long Wharf Theater, Williamstown Theater Festival, Laguna Playhouse, Pasadena Playhouse, Rubicon, etc. She started directing for ETC in 2025, and then 2025. 2005. 2005. I missed my notes up because in 2025, Justice was her 15th production. We've got all sorts of titles for ETC, The Children, Tenderly, Rosemary Clooney, Sleuth, The Legend of Giorgio McBride, I Am My Own Wife. That won an Indie Award. Baby Doll, Good People, Tea at Five, Year of Magical Thinking, Lion in Winter, another Indie Award. The Mystery of Irma Vep, another Indie Award. And The Clean House, another Indie Award. And the list goes on. Memory of Water, Dublin Carol, another Indie Award for that. And then other Santa Barbara productions, many, all over our town. And I got to say, Mother Earth, Father Sky, I actually was there. It was fantastic. She's worked a lot at the Libero, by the way. And let's see, films. She's directed films as well. She directed her father, Barry, in The Next Best Thing. And her film, I Know Catherine, and The Log Ladies, current screened across the country right now. And I guess the world premiere of her play, Jay, for Jay starring Jenny, Jeff Kober, and the late, great John Ritter. So before we started the program, Jenny was telling me that she lived for quite a while here in Santa Barbara and then has been coming back many, many, many times as requested to direct in our town. Super excited that we're going to talk to her about how she's going to direct this particular show. Now, I want to introduce also Nicholas Mongiardo Cooper. And I got to say, the fun thing about his bio, amongst really important things that we'll talk about, but he, people ask me, well, okay, do I know Nick? Have I seen Nick? Well, you might have, because he's done a commercial for Coors Light in which he sang, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning. And he was, I think, going to be Julie Andrews, I believe, in that particular role, because he's singing among the snow-capped mountains in the Coors Light commercial there. And yes, you've also seen him at the Libero and the Lonesome Travelers in concert. So he's a musician, singer, but also a wonderful performer. And he comes from a family of performers. And you know, this is I want to know what you say your family, Nick, what they did, were they musicians, were they thespians, etc. He loves music, music and also performing arts, and that was essential to him growing up. He's done a lot of character work. What does that mean? Well, we'll find out. He's appeared off Broadway, Rothschild and Sons, Lonesome Traveler, Julius Caesar. Regionally, he was here in Sweeney Todd and Fiddler on the Roof, Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder, Harvey at Laguna, and A Wicked Soul in Cherry Hill at the Geffen, A Waitress in Moonlight. Waitress is the name of the play, Moonlight. The Tempest in Alhambra, that's here. A Play That Goes Wrong, Sherlock Holmes' Last Adventure for Portland. Gosh, the list goes on and on and on. I will say that he's also done stints on television, Law and Order, and Dying for Sex, and Ghosts, and The Conners, and Fairly Odd Parents, and Danger Force, and Fuller House, and Superstore. You see what an accomplished artist he is. Casual for Hulu, and the films he's done, Let It Stay Here, Diamond Bar, Goodbye Knesseri, and the upcoming Sin and Tonic. What a great title. And like I say, musician, performer, you know, just a fantastic, what do you call it, entertainer all around. So I want to start with Jenny. So Jenny, tell me about Theater in the Round to be used in this play.
Well, the play really calls for the most equal participation for the whole audience. And the idea that if we can surround the actor, the performer, then the audience, there's an equality amongst the audience. There's not like just the first row and then way up in the back. They're around him. I mean, there's still a lot. We've actually gained seats in the theater by doing this, which is exciting. But the idea is our actor connects with everybody in the audience. There's a real democracy about it. What a
word.
So,
and so do you foresee when the play opens on June 3rd, do you foresee any surprises from the audience?
Oh, yes.
Aha. Uh-huh.
We've been spending all our rehearsal time and our tech time, you know, considering what are the surprises that are going to happen to us here, because the audience is immersive. The audience, what they give us, we give back. The connection with the audience is incredibly important, and it could go so many different ways and inspire the play in so many different ways. So that's what's really exciting about it. And we've been able to, we're actually like really running it now, but we're running with just a couple people who, you know, are stepping in for the audience, and we're getting kind of boring as being the audience. We're looking for those new people to come in the theater. And I think the third will really be fun because it's the pay what you can night. And that's a pretty enthusiastic audience.
So I understand that there's a list of things that the audience can read from. Is that correct?
Well, basically what happens is Nick will be, you know, he'll be hanging out with the audience in the lobby, in the theater, and he'll be handing out some things that have a number and a statement on it, that when the number is called, the audience is called upon to one thing that happens.
I see.
And we won't know where that's coming from because it'll be random.
And Nick, how do you feel about interacting each night before the curtain goes up, per se? You're already in character, right? And you're speaking with folks as they're coming in the theater. How does that work for you?
Well, I'm going to find out. We're all going to find out together. One of the beautiful things about this play is that it's not written as a fully developed, complete character. It's really meant to attach on to whoever the performer is. And so as a performer, Jenny has encouraged me and invited me, as the play dictates, to bring as much of myself to it as I can. And that's new for me. I spent a lot of my career playing odd characters. That's sort of what the life is for me. So for me to be able to bring myself is a new challenge. And I've been saying to Jenny, the interaction with the audience is scary, but it's good scary. And part of that has to do with the purpose of the play. There's this purity of intent in the play of bringing the community together. And so for me, it's an opportunity to really get hands-on and do that with people. And also there's a little bit of information to be given out at the beginning. So when I'm handing the cards out, to tell people to really shout out the words when I call the number, to use their voice because they're part of it just like I am. So there's a lot to do in that first section of this, which is greeting people, and I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so I have to sort of relate this to my own life. So my sister is an actress in New York, SAG actress in New York. And when you say that you're interacting with folks in the lobby and you are you're bringing you into the character, and you're interacting as Nick, I have never known my sister to actually show up the same person twice. So I guess my thought is Nick's doing Nick in the lobby, but is it Nick?
Pardon me. I'm sorry. My headphones died. So
yeah, that's okay. So my question was, you know, in the light of my sister being, you never know, family gathering, if she's going to show up, you know, as the arch vamp, or she's going to show up as the innocent maiden. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. And so, and this has been all of our lives. She's the youngest of all of us. There's quite a few of us. And so my question was, so you're interacting with the audience as they're coming into the theater. My question is, how much of that character that you're saying is Nick is really Nick?
Most of it.
Okay.
That's a brand new challenge for me. So most of it is interacting exactly how I would interact. There is no, one of the beautiful things about this play is how incredibly honest it is. So while we deal with the blunt honesty, really, really non-sugar-coated honesty of the darkness around depression and around people who have lost people to suicide, we also deal with the very real hope that combats it. So any insincerity doesn't really serve the play. Any sort of dishonesty doesn't invite the audience to participate the way we want them to. So really, as much of my own honest interaction that I can bring to meeting people in, at the front, but also throughout the show, it should feel seamless. It should feel like we as a group, anyone who comes to the theater, that we're all in conversation. That it really encourages me to engage in as close to self as I can.
Okay, so another question is, do you ever see, I mean, I'm just thinking of, you know, my mom's experience with depression, various family members, you know, there's the short-term depression, and then there's, in my mom, the long-term depression. And, you know, she would tell people, sometimes even strangers, the story of some of the tragedies in her life, and she was sort of like confessing in a way. I'm sort of envisioning you're in the lobby, and people, you know, you're talking to people, you're handing out some information, et cetera. You're being Nick. Do you think could it be that Nick is going to be acting like the doctor in the cocktail party? Oh, doctor, I have this issue. Blah, 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 blah. Do you envision that?
I can envision it. Nick is not going to have a ton of time. Because I've got a lot to do in that first section, and in addition to greeting people, I'm really, really handing out some brilliant things and asking people to participate. But I do anticipate a certain degree of people sharing their pain or their discomfort. I think that comes with the ask of this play. I think that when you invite people to be part of a community, you have to sort of expect that they're going to bring themselves, and that they bring themselves in good faith and with an openness. And yeah, I can see some of that happening. I can absolutely envision it happening. I won't have time to sit and chat endlessly with people, but I sure hope people feel comfortable and able to express themselves. So much of this play is about how much the act of talking about what's difficult can improve this, your outlook, your situation, how you see the world.
So you just go ahead, Jenny, sorry.
Oh, yeah, well, I would say, you know, to go further with that is, we will have sometimes after the show where there will be talkbacks, and I think that's when maybe what you're talking about, Elizabeth, will occur, with people always want to just kind of then reflect on how does it relate into their lives. But beginning, because, you know, we keep saying he's hosting a dinner, guests are, so he's just trying to find out who all the guests are and assess where, you know, it will the meal be the right meal for them? I don't know, something like that. So that's why it's full of surprises. But as we go through the play, and we've done some run-throughs, and we see the few people that have been around us, they're like, you know, they just want to, I don't think they even really want it to be over. They want to connect. So I think there will be some really interesting connections after the performance. I just wanted to put that in. So
I bet you, I bet you. I was sort of seeing Nick, you know, father confessor type of thing where, oh, yes, I can. Yeah, you know, I can identify. I can identify. And then, you know, you get the pouring out of some real emotions. And I guess I was thinking, you know, Jenny, are you going to curtail the talkback? Because I could see the talkback going on, you know, in sort of a, you know, what do you think?
Well, we'll see. I mean, we're still trying to sort all that out. We're some professional in to help moderate that because
I see.
I think that will be the most valuable thing. But I think some of the talkbacks, or no, it's not like we're doing a ton of them, but I think some of them, people are just going to want to know how the hell we managed to do this. because it is quite astonishing the kind of ease that I'm seeing in the performance and the being in the theater. But it's taken a lot of kind of carving out and making sure that we're telling the story of this character.
And the story of the character that you're telling, is it Nick's character or is it the mom? As far as
well, the story begins with my character as a 7-year-old who begins this list. And it begins with some very 7-year-old ideas, brilliant things, as a way to cheer his mom. And the truth is that the way the list develops over his life, we see very much the way the list affects not just his mother, the intended focus, but the other people in his life, his other relationships, and primarily himself, and a lot of the benefits of making that list are unanticipated at the beginning, but we make a journey and we see sort of how those things affect life going forward.
I get it. Okay, so it grows into something where you're actually, as a character and as a person, you're learning from every brilliant thing that's on the list. What about, I mean, in your own personal life, have you dealt with some of these themes? I know, you know, it's not really a dark subject, but it kind of is depression and a little bit of, you know, suicide, et cetera, and resilience. Where are you pulling this character, Nick?
No, I mean, I've as someone who struggled with depression, there's a lot piece that rings very true for me. And I have a lot of people in my life who have as well. And certainly, I'm adjacent to people who have died from suicide, and those cases seem to coincide with the increasing turmoil in the world, and those things can be incredibly distressing. And I don't think that, as I said before, this play doesn't pretend that that's not happening, because pretending that it's not happening doesn't actually help. Being honest about the dangers of these things and what they can lead to, talking about them, and coming up with healthy ways of looking forward and looking at the world around you and seeing what is valuable and affirming can be helpful. So I've been able to take both those things from this from my own life and bring it to this piece.
I was wondering about that because I was thinking about, you know, my mom and some of the folks that I've known with clinical depression. I was wondering how this works in the play, Every Brilliant Thing. Because if I was to say to my mom, oh, think of ice cream, she would picture it, you know, in the dark moments in a negative way. So, you know, you're depressed and, you know, things that you have maybe thought of in a better light, in a better state of mind, as being a joyful thing, you turn that into one more reason to be depressed because, for example, ice cream's not in my life anymore, or roller coasters aren't in my life anymore. And so, you know, that becomes more of a catalyst to deeper depression. And I was wondering, so, you know, the nature of depression is such that and maybe that's what you're dealing with in this play. The nature depression is that it's sort of like, you know, being a little bit buried with each clod of dirt.
I can only speak to my own experience and the experience of those close to me. I would say one of the biggest danger for me with my own struggle with depression is that it feeds on itself.
And exactly. So, that's exactly what I was trying to say. Yes.
So if I'm coming home from this wonderful experience of rehearsal and something bad happens, instead of having a list in my head of really brilliant things, something bad will happen and I will start listing bad things.
Yes.
And I find myself moving into a spiral downward. Now, one of the lovely things about this play is the encouragement to look for good things means that I actually can sometimes have a rope out of it. That, yes, that bad thing happens and I make a list and it chain reacts to another thing. And then I see something that I find life affirming and I can chain link onto that. It's not a fail-safe solution. There's no such thing. But it does equip me with an alternative. And that's really what the play is about engaging your imagination in order to see alternatives to the darkness.
Well, Richard's giving a sign we got to go to quick break, but I just want to reintroduce this fantastic conversation. I'm speaking with Nicholas Mongiardo Cooper, and I'm speaking with, he's the star of the show, Every Brilliant Thing, and that is opening on the 3rd of June at the New Vic, and I have the talented and multifaceted director, Jenny Sullivan, who's been visiting or living in Santa Barbara on and off for quite a bit of her life, talking about Every Brilliant Thing. I think a fantastic, and I just want to do a little teaser. We're going to go to a quick break, but when we get back from the break, I want to talk about relational thinking. So what I mean by that is, Nick and Jenny, so I had a fairly traumatic experience. I'm mm-hmm. here. Nicholas is my father confessor. I had a traumatic experience, and the strangest thing would trigger me going back to that experience. So it's like a PTSD. So I remember hanging a picture on the wall, nailing it with the hammer, and all of a sudden I was back in that experience, which had nothing to do with hanging a picture on the wall. But somehow my mind was making that relationship. And I was wondering about how that works in the play, if the relationships that you're, you know, like they say, every brilliant thing, those are the relationships that you're setting forward, all these brilliant things. But could some of the brilliant things also be triggers, I guess, or triggers to the darkness and to the light side, I guess. And I want to throw that out as a teaser, because I'd love to hear what you think about that. The nature of PTSD and depression is that you go backwards and you don't know why that triggers whatever it's triggering. And how this play combats that. Because I notice this is not just a fun play. This play has been seen in 70 countries. It's received the Drama Desk Award. It began at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. That's where I did my graduate work, by the way. It's, you know, this is a play with great resonance. So, you know, this is not one of those fun things. This is something that really relates what its message mm-hmm. is and how people, the audience, is experiencing it. That's why I asked Nick, are you the role of Father Confessor in a way? And how do you avoid, you know, how do you avoid that earful? You know, that's another good question. Anyway, Richard, let's go to quick break. We're back in the break. I want to know the relationship to metaphor and analogy that you're dealing with in this play. Okay, Richard, let's go to quick break. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I have the great honor and pleasure of talking with Jenny Sullivan, the director of Every Brilliant Thing, opening at the New Vic, presented by ETC, and also the star of the show, Nicholas Mongiardo Cooper. And we're talking about the nature of the play, and the play is dealing with a son reacting to a mom's clinical depression and how the son brings, as the title says, every brilliant thing to her attention to pull her up out of the chasm, darkness, whatever. And I was asking Nick about what the risk is of bringing himself and as a person, as a personal person, into the play, because as Jenny was talking about at the beginning of the play, he is, or the beginning of the event, he's reacting with the audience even as they're coming into the theater. And I'm thinking, I wonder how many people are going to cry on Nick's shoulder. I just was wondering that. And we talked a little bit during the break that I didn't know this, but Nick and Jenny go back 15 plus years. And this is a friendship in which the director is responsible for, if I'm not putting words in your mouth, Nick, for creating a safe space for you.
Absolutely. I mean, and because Jenny and I have known each other as long as we have, we did enter into this with some trust. I mean, even as I was auditioning for this role, there was Jenny created an environment in the audition that allowed me to really bring myself, and I assume to all the others who auditioned as well. It was a really beautiful setup. And so the result was that I felt immediately empowered to be myself and to interact without any sort of, the kind of judgment that generally comes with auditioning that we all make up in our heads as actors. We're so neurotic, and so much of our experience is about getting the job and landing the job. And what Jenny created in that environment, along with Scott and our casting directors, Michael Donovan and Richie Ferris, was an environment where I could exit the callback and feel like I played the part. I wasn't trying to get the part. I went in and did it. And that was really empowering. So I knew once I was fortunate enough to be offered this, that Jenny and I were going to have a really easy time in the room of being honest with each other and being allowed to be ourselves and bring our full selves to the room.
That is so interesting that the audition itself started a sort of a kickball down the road, and that this was a safe space that was even created as far back as the audition. And a question begs the question, Jenny, why Nick? Why was the choice Nick?
Well, it's just, there's something, number one, is you can hear he has the most spectacular voice, and he has the most spectacular smile. And the thing about this play that I've seen it twice with two completely different people. And, you know, we've been talking about the themes of depression and stuff like that. But for me, every time at the end of this play, I feel so uplifted and joyful. I knew that Nick was someone that could bring that to what we're doing. So that really was just the guidepost. We saw lots of different people. A woman can play the part, any ethnicity. I do think that the character should be at least over 30, but it's open. And Nick brought himself into the room, and that is the most important thing for me.
A follow-up question then for Nick. So obviously the play hasn't opened yet, but I'm wondering if any of the family members and the acquaintances you're talking about, if you say you're adjacent to various people that have suffered from clinical depression, et cetera, are these people, have they seen you do this role? Will they see you do this
role? No one yet. Though I certainly can't vouch for Jenny. Between Jenny and our wonderful stage manager, Crystal, and Brian McDonald at Ensemble, we've had between all of them, we've gotten a wonderful large group of volunteers who have come into the rehearsal to help me, because you really can't do this play without an audience. You need them there to participate and there to be a part of it. So I can't speak to any of them who have had their own private struggles. Certainly no one in my personal life has seen the show yet. Many of them are going to attend the run.
I see.
I think it's important to be clear about the subject matter of the show, but also not to lead too much with the darkness of it, because the show really is life-affirming. It really is about the positive components that we use in life to combat these things. So even if, and I personally find the show more empowering as someone who struggled with depression. I'm not sure that everybody will feel that way.
I see.
But I think that it is like anything, like any illness. There's an extraordinary interview making the rounds right now with Martin Short discussing the nature of depression and how it shouldn't really be considered very different from any other illness. Sometimes it's terminal and sometimes it's not. And with any illness, mm-hmm. you want to try what you can. You want to try what you can, anything that you can do that could maybe alleviate pain. And this particular play offers such an imaginative and positive idea for what that treatment can be.
Okay, so just to follow up on that, and I love what you said, by the way. I think that's so, so inspiring. Jenny, has anybody that's been in the play or around the play before, has anybody come and counseled you on the play?
Not particularly. I did have the good fortune to meet Johnny Donahoe a year ago, and I saw him do this play, and he picked me to be a character in the play, which I will never forget. And he's just, the thing about him is that he's just, you just want to hug him. There's so much kind of love coming out of him. And I know that he deals with, you know, a lot of depression, illness, mental illness, all this stuff. But he didn't counsel me. He did want to see the theater, and I took him over to see the New Vic because it's a beautiful theater, and this is an extraordinary revamping of how this theater will look, especially to people who've been there before.
Yeah.
And he was very excited about it. So that's really it.
So Johnny Donahoe, just as sort of background for the listening audience, Johnny Donahoe originated the role and also was co-writer of the show.
Correct.
And we already mentioned the show has been seen in 70 countries. So did Johnny come to Santa Barbara and see the theater?
And he came, he was doing a benefit for New Beginnings up here with his new show called Johnny and the Baptists. And I went and saw it and I introduced myself. And he said he wanted to come see, it was over at Center Stage. He wanted to see the New Vic. And I said, great. You know, and he did say, I asked him if I run into any issues, can I email you, call you, whatever. And he said, absolutely. But you know, we're on our own journey, our own experience.
Yeah.
I will send him pictures, but that'll be it probably.
Right. Yeah. I get it. Well, that's so interesting that he had he actually knows about us, and that's very cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this idea that, you know, we talked about Martin Short, and I've read a little bit of his the reviews on his presentation around depression, and he does mention the genetic component to depression. Mm-hmm. And I know that Nick was kind of, I don't know if you heard it, audience out there, but Nick mentioned, I think maybe it was during the break, that was another very interesting like stepping stone for him personally. And I can really identify with that. As regards to the genetic component, does the play deal with that? I know it's very important to family, resilience, etc. Does the play deal with that?
The play doesn't make an enormous distinction between the genetic component of depression and the societal
situational,
of depression, because it does dive very specifically into not into the causes of depression, but into the ways we can change the way we talk about it. Because if we change the way we talk about it, we can stop people from being influenced by the harmful actions of others. So while it may, there's absolutely the idea of genetic depression in this play, because we're talking about a direct parent-child relationship.
Yeah.
But we also talk about the societal elements of that and how these things happen. You can be affected by someone you've never even met engaging in this, depending on how it's presented in a TV show or on a newspaper headline. These various things can all be factors in how we react to our own depression. So while the play doesn't specifically say anything about genetics, I think it's very clear that we're talking about those two elements.
I get it. Okay, so you know, some of the verbiage that we used around my mom, many of her children, you know, the black dog is following her, she's on the dark train, you know, these sorts of things where, yeah, I was wondering but it's language itself. It's so interesting because this is like Greek theater in a way. It goes back to the catharsis part, you know, where it's the language and the narrative that's actually sucking out those evils, you know, in a collective method, you know, which is this beautiful play. And I was wondering, as far as the cathartic element, Jenny, I know you haven't opened the play yet, and that's June 3rd, but you have seen the play twice before. When people are exiting the theater, what's their faces showing you?
Oh, they are ecstatic. They are
really
ecstatic. And we're doing a thing at the theater, which I've seen at other places, giving people, and we've done it with people who've come in the rehearsal hall, giving people an opportunity to take a piece of paper and write down a brilliant thing in their life. And there'll be a place at the New Vic where they can put it on a wall. And people are thinking about this sort of thing. It just, I can't tell you, there's something about the uplift at the end of this play and the journey that we go on that just, I just think it just, people are pretty happy to have gone through this experience. So, and want to share. They don't want it to be over. They want to write down a brilliant thing. And my suggestion is to everybody, take time to look at those things in your life. It's really helpful.
Well, I just want to just quick shout out Every Brilliant Thing. It previews on Wednesday, June 3rd, and that's Community Pay What You Can night. And as Jenny was saying, that's a rowdy time. That's at 7:30, Thursday, June 4th at 7:30, and Friday, June 5th at 8 o'clock. Opens on Saturday, June 6th, which is the press opening at 8 p.m., and then it's going to run, and it's, you know, here again, grab the tickets, guys, because it's running through Sunday, June 21st. And this is at the New Vic, which everybody knows. It's 33 West Victoria Street. And the prices, tickets, really reasonable. I mean, for this particular show, it ranges starting at $40, et cetera. Patrons and 35 and under are $35. Student tickets, $25. Write this down if you can, guys. The ETC ticket office, 805-965-5400. Check out the show and some of the information on the show online at ETC, like et cetera, sb.org. And we are so excited that Nick's here in town to bring us as a star of the show. And I'm also super excited that Jenny's back with us again, directing this wonderful show. I'm so excited to see it with all the baggage that, you know, I know in my life from, you know, what this play is addressing, which is depression, suicide, family, and love and resilience and finding joy more than anything in small things as we go forward in this society. As Nick was saying, even a headline can make you crazy. So, you know, this is an important thing to remember. The small things in life are sometimes the biggest things in life. You know, so that's the thing. All right. Bye, Richard. Thank you. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you, Nick. I look forward to the opening. I'll be there. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you for the time.
We'll see you. Thank you so much. Okay.